This is Tell Me More, the Sunday magazine on 101.1 More FM, WBEB Philadelphia. I'm Emily Scheibert. Good morning. This week, preparing to care for your aging parents. Whether the care is provided by family or by a professional, we'll get advice from an expert, Bryant Green of America's Best Care Senior Services, in this edition of Tell Me More. When people go through any major life change, graduation, marriage, parenthood, there's often a period of learning and preparation. However, we're rarely given the opportunity or skills to get ready to care for an elder. My guest, Bryant Green, knows all about it. Not only does he care for elderly family members himself, but he is the CEO of America's Best Care Senior Services in Philadelphia, Bucks, and Delaware counties. Always Best Care provides compassionate and professional care for seniors and others when they need it most, helping clients manage life's daily routines or providing respite care for the holidays. Bryant says working in the elder care field was a great fit for him.
I had the blessing of having both great-grandparents. My mother started way, way young. She was a teenage mom. So when your mother starts young, you have her grandparents. And so, you know, I got to know my grandmother's mother, you know, and looking back, you know, I didn't choose senior care. It kind of fell into my lap. I was laid off my last corporate America job, and I was out evangelizing my skills at a career fair / diversity career fair pink slip party. And a gentleman, that's what they were calling them back then, you know, it was pink slip parties, right? Because everybody was there. Everybody's in the street. And anyway, a gentleman approached me, a franchise broker approached me and asked me, would I be interested in starting my own business? And I thought at the time, who in the world starts a business in the bowels of a recession? Who does that? You know, who really? So he asked me, he said, well, you know, humor me. If you could start your own business, what would it be? And I told him a strip club. And he laughed. He said, you're really serious? I said, well, what else is recession proof, man? Get to it. You know, I've been on the street now almost a year. I have 2 degrees. I have a kid about to graduate from high school. Got to go to talking about college. There's no guarantee she's going to get a scholarship. My ex is on my neck. Let's talk about it. Anyway, he invited me back to his office. And he introduced me to 4 turnkey operations, and the one that appealed to me naturally the most was senior care. And to be honest with you, Emily, I never thought of it as a business because in my family, not only did I have my grandmother, but I had all of her siblings in there. I grew up with old people. I grew up with seniors in my life. So, you know, providing care was kind of almost a way of life. And I'm the second oldest in the complete generation, but in my pod, I'm the oldest. And so I was called upon to take care of seniors or make deliveries or run errands almost like that was my way to get the car back as a teenager. Oh, I go over grandma's. I'll take it over grandma's house because I can get the car then, right? But, you know, naturally now there's so many different scenarios that we come across with senior care. Everything in my life has prepared me for this season of my life. You know, when I look at it, I like it when we have a difficult case because I'm responsible for my grandparents. You know, to say it out loud, I almost have to acknowledge the fact that I'm a caregiver. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make. They don't acknowledge that I am the caregiver, sometimes by choice, but a lot of times by default. Yeah. And then it's special when you're the caregiver and you have a cooperative caree. But what happens when you're not the chosen caregiver? You know, or mom or dad wants the other sibling or the sibling that's oftentimes remote in Florida or California, and you know, you're the one that they make you feel like they're the one, you're the one that they got stuck with. We deal with that scenario more times than not. So, you know, I support a lot of caregiver support groups. My scope of practice is to send people, good people, into folks' homes. But more and more, I've gotten more into community service and a lot of ways a political activist and trying to, you know, the laws, the legislative decisions that affect things like Medicaid or the reimbursement rate for providers or, you know, even lifetime bans on background checks because a lot of the caregiver pool is shrinking. You know, we've seen a rise in the request for male caregivers, mostly because when there's ambulatory issues, when people need help transferring, or if they live in a difficult or tough neighborhood, you know, sometimes people request a male caregiver. More and more common.
You may have to lift a 170-pound person out of a bed.
Shift them out, and especially if there's a situation where the Hoyer lift is not enough room for a Hoyer lift in tight spaces. And depending on the person, there's some people that can't even get on a Hoyer lift. You know, you have to manually move them or prop them up and that kind of thing. And there's ways that you lift and that kind of deal, but more and more. Not saying that, shout out to my female caregivers, because somebody will hear my voice and say, I move people. It's just as of late, in some scenarios, more than we've seen, you know, there have been more of a request for male caregivers.
The way we age is changing, and because we're living longer, the needs of the elder population is changing too. And I think the one great fear of all older people is ending up somewhere in an institution. Most people have the desire to age in place. And I know that's a term that you use. Mm-hmm. And you provide a whole bunch of services that really help families allow their elder to stay where they would like to stay, which is at home, for as long as they can.
Yes, we provide services, non-medical and skilled services, anything on the non-medical side, from companion care, light meal preparation, light housekeeping, escort services. We provide, you know, if people want to go to the mall and people watch, we provide personal care in terms of bathing, grooming, dressing, incontinence care, dementia care, cancer care, if you're recovering from a stroke or something like that. We get involved and we try to tailor the care plan oftentimes to the need and budget of the family. Oftentimes, on the skills side, we provide PT, OT, well, here I go with the acronyms, physical therapy, occupational therapy, wound care, assistance, and that kind of a deal. But, you know, when we match it up on a non-medical side, and there's a longer frequency and duration of the visit, we try to match the caregiver to the needs and to the personality of the client. And that's important because oftentimes you have, you know, the intergenerational vibe. What does that mean? That means that, you know, I have caregivers from that range in age from 20 to 77. But most of the caregivers are probably in that 20-something to 30-something age range, and some would refer to them as millennials. And seniors, you know, are of a certain age, of a certain work ethic. It's always funny or interesting when I take on an assignment to take care of a retired healthcare professional, particularly a nurse. You know, and back in the day, nurses, and I'm saying nurses today are not serious, but back then, nurses didn't wear fingernail polish. They didn't wear excessive jewelry. They, you know, they were really about their care in terms of polished shoes. They took pride in it. It was a lot more LPNs back then than it was RNs. And so, you know, they had the cape. They had the hat. You know, so when you send a young person in, and you see the young people, no knock to my young people because I love them to death, but, you know, sometimes they have the excessive jewelry or the tattoos or, mm-hmm. you know, or
piercings.
You know, the piercings and the long fingernails. And so when you send that person in to prepare to a nurse, a retired nurse, from the door, she's sizing you up, or they're sizing you up, like, oh, God, what is this? You get ready to take care of who? Who are you going to provide care for? You know, so we smash the ice. You know, when we go out and we do assessments and we talk to folks, we do an honest assessment of what they can do and what they can't do. But then we also get into the personality of the person. What did they do? Were they a retired school teacher? Were they a healthcare worker? Were they a field worker? Were they sales? You know, what did they like to do? Do they like to watch game shows, judge shows, you know, the old westerns? Or do they like to do, you know, crossword puzzles or the seek and finds? Are they an intellectual person that likes to read books or the newspaper? Did they travel? We have a lot of seniors that like pets. You know, do they smoke? You know, do they like art? You know, do they garden? We have a lot of seniors that love to move the earth. You know, we get into their head so that we can pair them with somebody that they're compatible with. And then, you know, it's great when you see the intergenerational vibe work in a lot of different ways. We have a lot of our seniors that mentor and coach young people that are coming into the field of care. And a lot of our home health aides and CNAs aspire to be RNs or doctors or therapists, and it's always nice to see the older person mentor them. You know, it's great when you hear that vibe. And then the reverse of that is when my caregivers say, "Oh, I showed her how to get on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and now she has a computer and she's my Facebook friend, and you know she's playing Candy Crush and you know those kind of things." So you know, it's an intergenerational vibe. You're right; people are living longer, mostly women. Keep it statistically, that just proves it. And I don't know if it's because you guys do a lot of, you know, preventive care, proactive care, but, you know, I take care of a few centenarians. My oldest client is 102. Wow. Shout out to Frances Osborne. Her mind is super sharp, but her body's not. And she wouldn't mind me telling you that. You know, but, you know, she's a history lesson. And so when you send a young person in there, they can tell you about when women weren't allowed to vote. When women were pushed into being either teachers or nurses, you know, mostly. Not, you know, when women, you know, had to take on the masculine job and role when a lot of men were at the World War. You know, you talk to a woman that's lived 100 years, she's going to tell you different, the amount of presidents, the administrations, and, you know, before desegregation, before civil rights, to live in that space. You know, it's always interesting to talk to them. When the banks crash, you know, you live with somebody that lived through the Depression, they don't trust the banks. That's where all of the money, saving the money under the mattress comes from. Because they lived through the time when the banks crashed. You know, we had that scenario not too long ago, but, you know, we're going to see.
What do you think the best attribute of a caregiver is?
An effective listener. When I used to interview caregivers early in this career, and I trained my HR, my operations managers to ask the conflict resolution question: how do you resolve conflict? And a lot of times they'll dance around it, but it's the people that say they listen. Because seniors, you know, whatever the scenario is, whatever your shortcomings are, they're a lot forgiving. You know, if you don't know how to cook a 5-course meal, but you can scramble an egg, you know, and then if the senior's getting upset because you're sticking a cup of water in a microwave as opposed to boiling the water on a stove, you know, those are deal breakers. Sounds strange, but it's not. In my world, if you can't make up a bed with hospital corners, then, you know, it's a deal breaker. So I say, you know, of course you want them to be caring, you want them to be attentive, but most of the time, if you have those skills plus being an effective listener, if you listen, 9 times out of 10, if you have a problem with a senior, if you listen, you can resolve it.
What about the dialogue that goes on within families when mom or dad is starting to need some care? You're noticing things maybe aren't going as smoothly in their lives, or they're starting to forget or having struggle paying bills and taking care of themselves on a daily basis. What does that conversation look like? What's the most effective way to open the door to talking about some assistance in their lives?
When you notice that your loved one, be it your aunt, your parent, or your grandparent, is starting to decline physically, the conversation should be honest. It should be, if it's multiple siblings, I always tell multiple siblings, if I'm invited to the conversation, if we're being proactive, and they say, well, there's no way in the world mom is going to let anybody into this house. It's a stranger. I always say, first, let's identify the person that mom listens to. If you're the person that mom is always fighting with, you're not the person to lead the conversation. It's that sibling, it's that child that she reveres and she listens. And I hate to say it, but you know, people, if you're going to be transparent, it's not the favorite, it's the one that moves mom. It's the one that says, hey, mom, you should consider this. Dad, you consider this. It's time to consider this. First of all, you should identify that person. And when you identify that person, then it's time to really have that honest conversation, but in a way that still empowers them in their mind to have control. You know, the one thing I tell people all the time is nobody is an expert at getting old. Nobody. Nobody is an expert at getting old. So you have to really stop and think yourself. Right now, independently, you give yourself meals, you give yourself a bath, you know, you travel independently. When you start to think you have to wait on somebody to do that, that's what you do to put yourself in that senior's space. And that normally, when you empathize that way and you approach that conversation, and you know your parents, you know your people, you know, you can't always have a soft conversation. You have to kind of spring it upon them and say, hey, listen, give them scenarios. You know, you don't have to wait for me on the weekend to go shopping or to wash your clothes. You can have you know, somebody come in here and you'll be in charge. You'll be the boss. You know, you'll be in boss. They'll be here to assist you, not control. There's a lot of statistics out there that say the biggest fear of seniors is to be victimized, number one. But I think, you know, in my experience, a close second or number one would be fear of losing control.
Yeah.
You know, you have that conversation, Mom, it's time for you to stop driving. What? I'm okay. Well, you've been in accidents, you know, your insurance premiums you are on a fixed income. Your insurance premiums are taking you way over the edge. That would cut a huge chunk back into your budget if you just stop thinking about it. Oh, maybe you're right, but then I have to wait on somebody. Well, no, if you get a caregiver, somebody can take you. We can time your doctor's appointments and plan it out. We can work this out. But you have to give them the control. The best way to approach it, too, is when you're being proactive before there's a fall. Before there's a catastrophic instance. You know, if you start to see mail is piling up and Mom is disheveled and the house is not kept and that kind of deal, that's when you really want to start having a conversation. You don't want to wait until there's a fall or there's an accident or something that you now have to react. And now it's a whole lot of resentment, you know, because why can't you do it? You know, why can't I come stay with you? Well, you know, Mom, I got kids. I got to manage them too. I have work-life balance too. You know, so that work-life family balance, you know, your new normal, you know, for some people can be overwhelming.
Well, I remember the time my mother began to talk to me without being prompted about thinking about making a change. And my dad was still alive at that point. And she could see that without him being there to drive for her, mm-hmm. that her life would change very dramatically and that we were looking for a house at the time, and she kept making little comments like, well, maybe there'll be a room in there for us. We'll chip in, you know, that kind of thing. And so that opened the door to a more serious dialogue about maybe being
assisted.
Yes, that's right. Assisting my folks in their later years, which we decided to do and bought a house with that in mind. And as you say, the pre-planning made it so easy because we weren't doing this in the wake of a funeral mm-hmm. or some catastrophic health emergency. We were doing it proactively while they were still pretty independent and pretty capable. And that really helped reduce the stress that can be involved in moving an elder into your home or moving into their home or however it looks. It's best done with a little bit of foresight and planning, as you say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you're reactive, you're stressed, you're dealing with emotions, and so a lot of times you may not be making the best decision. You're making a Band-Aid decision. And in your mind, it's hard. One thing you have to acknowledge, too, is that, you know, there is a void here. And sometimes it's not a quick fix. You have to plan it. A quick fix can be a worse fix. You know, you have to sit down and say, hey, Mom, you can't do the steps anymore. You know, Dad, you know, you can't drive anymore. You're like Mr. Magoo out here. You know, come on. You know, and I had a conversation with my grandfather. I said, you know, I'm going to be all right. You may be all right, but what if you hurt? How are you going to feel if you hurt somebody else? What does that look like? So you don't want to hurt anybody. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. And you have all these people around you that can take you. And where do you really want to go? And when you could drive, where were you really going? Now you're just driving to be driving. Where are you really going? And I'm blessed to, you know, still have my grandparents. I recognize a lot of people don't even have their parents. I can't imagine my world without my grandparents. But I have to stick to the plan. When you deviate away from the plan, I'm in charge of their budget. I'm in charge of them. I'm the power of attorney. I'm not the medical power attorney. It's one of my aunts because she's a nurse. And with my grandmother, you have to be kind of a clinician because, you know, she'll out-talk the average doctor because she's been a nurse for close to 50 years. So she knows what to say, what to prompt, what to do, and that kind of thing. And she's been a caregiver for my grandfather. And so... Now she needs a caregiver. They both need caregivers. So that's a whole different dynamic. You know, he's used to being the boss, and she's used to being the nurse. Well, you know, in my family, a lot of people will come to her because, you know, she has that clinical background. And so now, you know, it's hard to tell that person that you need help and to get them to buy into that because they're still trying to do. So
it's amazing that you've had this personal experience because it informs everything you're doing at your job.
Yes. I had the benefit of, you know, both great grandmothers. And I spent a lot of time with them growing up. I spent a lot of time with both grandmothers and both great-grandmothers. So I'm a great cook. When I have time, I can bake. I've learned a lot of things that people nowadays don't probably pass off traditionally, etiquette and that kind of thing. You know, I used to get teased all the time because as a kid, I would, you know, yes ma'am, no ma'am. I was just raised with different things. You know, a lot of times in the city that you don't hear now. You know, I remember kids saying, "Oh my God!" And the teachers loved me because they, "Oh, you're so proper." I didn't think it was proper. I couldn't say yeah in my house. It was not allowed. You know, it was yes, yes, no, what? You know. You didn't breathe down and that kind of thing, certain things. But with that, too, the obstinance and their way of thinking. Like I said, you know, nowadays it's interesting, you know, because I have a daughter that's a millennial. And sometimes, you know, our communication is challenged. You know, we live in a nice home and a farm and that kind of thing. And sometimes I'll text her and she'll say, "Dad, I'm right here." And I'll say, "Well, you know, I was trying to get into your space because you don't put that phone down." And so when you deal with seniors of a different work ethic, you know, on time to them means 10, 15 minutes early. When you're arriving, if you're due to be there at 8 o'clock, then you're there 7:45. If you're getting there at 8 o'clock and you're not ready to work, you're late. The way you wash dishes was a protocol. You know, and so I get so tickled to myself and I laugh because I know that a lot of times, you know, I myself too grew up in a fast technology age, but now it's faster with technology and you know, communication and that kind of thing. So that's sometimes a challenge in the way we train caregivers, sometimes the way we communicate. But having that experience with cranky seniors, and they wouldn't mind me telling you, because sometimes they can be cranky. You know, my grandparents, you know, are a lot, they mean the world to me. But sometimes you really have to take yourself out of it. And I walk away from the conversation sometimes like, wow, I might have been really, really, really disrespectful, but I needed to say that you can't drive there. You can't have that. And I go somewhere and I silently, you know, not grieve, but I silently beat myself up, but I can't back down because, you know, for health restrictions and that kind of thing, I got to stand firm. It's a complete role reversal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True.
It's a complete role reversal in a lot of ways.
And the beating yourself up is just one of the truths about caregiving.
It
You're always
is.
Self-doubting. You're always wondering, could you have been kinder, gentler, more wise?
Could you have done it? You know, and then sometimes you have to give yourself permission to maintain your work life balance and find what it is that brings you a center of peace. For me, it's my animals. I have a farm. For I've talked to certain people. Some people now do Zumba or they dance. Some people go to the movies. Some people just go to Walmart or Target or whatever you go to, a department store, and just people watch, just walk around. But you have to still maintain you, and whatever that center is for you, you have to maintain. It's very important. It's very important to acknowledge that you are the caregiver and to treat yourself, you know, to some time. It's all right to date yourself. You know, when you date yourself, you take yourself to the movies, or you take yourself to a spa treatment, or a Phillies game, or a Sixers game. You have to have that time where it's just you. No kids, no seniors. It's your time. And stick to it, because the mental, your mental stability is a really important part of your work-life balance. And I'm not a clinician. I'm a human being, and I have that experience. And I talk to people all the time that get so caught up in making, you know, sometimes and that's what I'm saying, the reactive approach is you're avoiding yourself. You know, when you're proactive, you can plan for yourself. Like, you know, okay, I might have to take mom to the doctor's appointment or do her laundry or something like that. But I also have to take my kids to soccer practice or a game or a dance recital or so forth and so on. But my time comes on Wednesday when I go to Zumba class, you know, or I go to the gym. Some people go to the gym. You know, some people go, like I said, to sports events or movies. That's important. Work-life balance. If I had to say one thing, Emily, work-life balance is so important so you don't implode.
Talk a little bit, Bryant, if you would, about giving care to those with dementia and Alzheimer's. That's a very, very specialized area of care. I know that at Always Best Care Senior Services, you do provide services to that population. What makes that care so special, and what are the challenges for the family caregivers trying to deal with it?
Well, first and foremost, I tell most people that are dealing with some form of dementia is that you have to acknowledge it. You cannot sweep it under the rug. You have to acknowledge the fact that your loved one is not cognitively there. And once you acknowledge that to yourself, that this is not, you know, complete, mom is here in body, but her mind is not here. You have to acknowledge that. It is not senility, and it is a very serious situation, especially if they wander or something like that. Once you acknowledge it, you have to identify your resources in terms of, you know, your physical resources. Who is going to support? Is it going to be siblings? Is it going to be a home care agency? Is it going to be a facility? What level of dementia are they at? Are they at the Ruby stage? Are they at their last stage? You know. Once you get a diagnosis and that kind of deal, you have to acknowledge who's going to be your resource. And it's a specialized care because you might be dealing with somebody that is physically able to still walk and still feed themselves and that kind of thing. But mentally, they're not there. And cognitively, they don't know what the president is. Now, that kind of thing. You have to acknowledge that, and you have to have eyes on them at all times. And, you know, to do that, it's more of an assignment for one person. So I think a lot of people implode when first they run and they keep it as a secret. And it's so interesting to me. I've seen people try to, like, you know, shut down and just keep it in the family and that kind of thing. Sometimes that's the worst thing you can do. You want people that you trust in your neighborhood to know that mom or dad have dementia, so that if you do miss a step, you know, sometimes that old adage, it takes a village. It absolutely takes a village. I'll give you a scenario. My Uncle Dill, my grandfather's older brother, had been a park ranger for years. He had been retired for years. And, you know, one of the neighbors caught him. You know, as a family plan, you know, the family had just missed maybe a block of maybe 10 or 15 minutes in the pass off of caregiver. My Uncle Dill put on his clothes. And he was going to work. He was on his way to the subway. And one of the neighbors caught him and said, "Mr. Green, where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to work." And they knew that he had dementia. So they talked to him and got him a cup of coffee until one of the family members could get him and take him back. But the worst thing that you could do is not have a plan. And it is a special kind of plan because you have to be around the clock. And that's more than anyone, you know, let's face it. You know, everybody needs at least 8 hours of sleep. So that means then you need support. And I would tell people we're a big support of the Alzheimer's Association. They have all kinds of resources. For your listeners, I would tell them to look up ALZ.org. And they have a 24/7 hotline that you can talk to people for support or resources. If you're unsure how to go about it, if you need somebody to walk away, or maybe you just need to talk to somebody that's going through the same thing you're going through. Because there's nothing like, you know, being, you know, verbally abused by somebody or even physically abused by somebody that doesn't really know who you are. You know, that wears down on the average person's mental. But when you talk to people that are going through the same thing, it's always really interesting to me when I see caregiver support groups, and this is what I'm referring to. You know, when they sit there, they feel everybody, to some degree, a lot of people feel isolated. They feel like they're going through this alone, and it's an amount of shame to some degree because you don't know if you're doing all the right moves. You don't know, you know, you're feeling guilty to some degree because you're not around. And sometimes you're feeling resentful because there are other multiple siblings that are around that are not helping you, but then expect everything to go perfect. You know, it's all kinds of different scenarios that when people start talking to strangers sometimes, they feel so empowered. Like, okay, first of all, it's not just me. Second of all, this can be done. It is something that can be done with a plan. I've heard a lot of people say that they grieve their people, you know, before they pass away because they're really not there. They recognize that person, you know, embodied mom's mind, dad's mind is not there. So if you're asking me steps to take would be, first of all, acknowledging the fact that there is something serious that you have to deal with. You cannot say, oh, mom will be all right, dad will be all right, because you're setting yourself up for something catastrophic to happen. Second, come up with a plan. And a plan involves, you know, really acknowledging who are the support systems, where are the resources. And it's not a bad idea, as I said, to look up ALZ.org, which is Alzheimer's.org, and there are all types of resources, caregiver support programs that they could turn you on to.
Well, Bryant Green of Always Best Care Senior Services, thanks so much for being our guest and taking the time.
Thank you so much for having us. Great. We really appreciate this. Thank you.
Bryant Green of America's Best Care Senior Services. He says they have a 24-hour-a-day phone line to help families with elder care questions. For more information, visit alwaysbestcare.com/PA/Bristol. For 101.1 More FM, I'm Emily Scheibert.